Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. And we start with a new poll, not of either of the presidential races, but from Gallup Tracking. The Gallup poll has been looking year after year, starting in 2008, at the political composition of the 50 U.S. states. In other words, which way do the 50 states lean? And obviously, 2008 was a very Democratic year. Obama won easily over John McCain. He got good, solid majorities for the Democrats in the House and Senate. And at that time, the Gallup organization concluded that there were 35 Democratic states, 5 Republican states, and then 10 that were considered competitive. So it was plus 30 for the Democrats. By the time Obama was reelected in 2012, it was plus 7, 19 Democratic states, 12 Republican states. That means 19 were competitive. Here at the end of 2015, beginning of 2016, the table is now reversed. 14 Democratic states, 20 Republican states for a 6 Republican state advantage. That means 16 are competitive. So the Democrats have lost 21. The Republicans have picked up 15, and 6 more are competitive. So, Ian, obviously, this isn't going to necessarily tell us what's going to happen here in November this year. But if you're looking for a trend, it's definitely headed in the right direction.
Right. Absolutely. This squares, of course, with what we've been seeing at state level races over the course of the past couple of years. This lines up with the fact that we have 30 Republican governors and a whole bunch of state legislatures and the rest. It also indicates an intensity gap, it seems to me at least, because of the way that they're evaluating this based on registration, partisan, or at least partisan affiliation, how people identify to Gallup. Then what you're seeing is probably, a number of people who are either no longer wanting to identify as Democrats or people who are comfortable, again, identifying as Republicans, either as protest against the president and his policies or, in favor of the party that they see controlling Congress or, running the race or running this presidential race or whatever the case may be. So that, to me, is probably the stronger sign because it indicates a sort of working theory that I have, which is if you have a good, strong Republican candidate, that is, if you nominate Cruz or Rubio or one of these folks, and the Democrats nominate Hillary, what you're likely to see is not a whole swath of Democrats who are dissatisfied with her jump over to the Republican candidate, but simply not show up. And that would square with sort of long-term trends at the end of a president from the same party who served 2 terms. And that would be a good thing for Republicans. Turnout is going to matter a whole lot. So I don't want to read too much into this. These things always fluctuate, of course. They're sort of just good indicators of national mood, I guess you could say. But that might be a hopeful sign going into November.
Bit of caution when you look at it. It was plus 30 for the Democrats in 08, plus 7 in 12. On the electoral map, only 2 states changed. Indiana and North Carolina went to Romney that had not gone to McCain. So don't take it to the bank that the electoral map is going to look a whole lot different. Obviously, it needs to look somewhat different if we're going to be in a better mood come November than conservatives have been in the past 2 cycles. So interesting,
right.
Interesting to look at, though. But on to the bad martini now, and there's so much bad political news out there. But we bring back President Obama. He hasn't been in the Three Martini Lunch for a while because we've been focusing so much on the presidential race. But yesterday, he earned it. The president yesterday spoke at the Islamic Society of Baltimore. And this is the first time the president has spoken at a mosque, the White House making a big deal of that in his presidency. And part of the problem, of course, is which one he picked. This one, as the Investor's Business Daily points out, has been under FBI surveillance since at least 2010 when it collared one of the members of that mosque for plotting to bomb an Army recruiting center not far from the mosque in Maryland. And it has also had ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. A previous imam there had close ties with Anwar al-Awlaki, who, of course, was one of the key figures for al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. So that's part of the bad martini. And then there's what the president had to say in his address yesterday. First of all, he had this to say about American history.
So here's another fact. Islam has always been part of America. Starting in colonial times, many of the slaves brought here from Africa were Muslim, and even in their bondage, some kept their faith alive. A few even won their freedom and became known to many Americans.
And then after denouncing political speech, which I'm sure is a shot at Donald Trump and perhaps other Republicans on the campaign trail, he talked about this anecdote from his meetings at the mosque prior to the speech.
They talked about how their children were asking, are we going to be forced out of the country? Are we going to be rounded up? Why do people treat us like that? Conversations that you shouldn't have to have with children, not in this country.
Ian, a lot to unpack here, and those are only two clips from a fairly lengthy speech. I think most conservatives would obviously agree that the First Amendment certainly applies to Muslims, but the idea that Islam was woven into the founding fabric of the United States as part of the founding ideal is certainly a stretch to many. And in a speech that the White House touted as an attempt to unite America, that second clip there seemed to be doing quite the opposite.
Yeah, three things come to mind. First is, given the particular mosque that the president chose, it confers an enormous amount of legitimacy on a mosque that just a couple of years ago, national security officials were surveilling for all the reasons you mentioned. That's an alarming thing for a president to do. There are plenty of mosques he could have gone to. Why this one, why he chose to raise all of these questions is beyond me. And it's not just a frustrating choice. It's unsavory in a certain way. It's troubling. The second thing is the president's unwillingness to do anything but stroke the egos of the various, you know, quote-unquote oppressed groups that he talks to. That's what this was. And that's what the president's dealings with the Muslim world at large have always been, from his Cairo speech to his, you know, ordering the administrator of NASA to prioritize helping the Muslim world feel good about their scientific achievements, and now to this speech. You know, I don't think this president would have any qualms about going to the Basilica in Washington, D.C. and telling the Catholic Church that it's made some serious mistakes in recent years and needs to own up to them and shape up and the rest. He wouldn't have any problem doing that. But he goes to this mosque and pretends that there's nothing wrong within Islam. It's what we've seen for the past 7 years. And it's one of the reasons that people such as myself are so extraordinarily frustrated. The third thing is simply this president's astonishing capacity for lecturing. Every 2 weeks, it's a new lecture to the American people about how awful you folks are, how, you know, you need to shape up. And what this speech is, you know, go back to your mention of trying to create this narrative of the importance of Islam in American history. I mean, yeah, sure, you can find examples going back centuries, but we're not talking about a significant intellectual or cultural strain within American history, but this is his way fabricating a narrative so that he can lecture his political opponents or political dissenters about what horrible people they are and how that if they'll only get on board with the way that he sees the world and the policies that he wants to implement, all things would be sweetness and light. A, it's not true, and B, it's deeply offensive, and C, it doesn't actually promote any good.
It's not who we are, I think, is the
Exactly. That catch-all slogan that doesn't mean anything, but just signals his inestimable virtue.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And we can't go a full day without talking about the 2016 campaign. After all, we're only 5 days away from the New Hampshire vote. We've got a Democratic debate tonight. We've got a Republican debate on Saturday, and they'll sorts of sniping to come between the candidates between now and then, I'm sure. Jeb Bush is the one we're going to look at here in the crazy martini. Jeb did not put a lot of emphasis on Iowa. He came away with a little over 3%, which got him one whole delegate out of the Hawkeye state. He is obviously making his stand in New Hampshire to make a credible case for continuing in this campaign. So he's going to a bunch of different events, campaigning hard. He was at a town hall meeting on Wednesday and was talking about national security, which led to one of the more sad moments in this year's campaign.
So here's my pledge to you. I will be a commander-in-chief that will have the back of the military. I won't trash talk. I won't be a divider-in-chief or an agitator-in-chief. I won't be out there blowharding, talking a big game without backing it up. I think the next president needs to be a lot quieter, but send a signal that we're prepared to act in the national security interests of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
Ian, please clap. If that's what's it's going on just a few days before the votes. I mean, a lot of conservatives obviously have some issues with Jeb Bush. He seems like a decent guy. It's just painful to watch this play out right now.
Oh, man. It's... Oh, I feel so badly. I think I've said on this program before that I've wanted to give Jeb Bush a hug, and never more than that moment yesterday. Is there a mercy rule in the primary? I mean, it was so painful. And the thing is, he's right. I mean, the at least what he was saying right before that. I mean, he was quite right about the need for leadership. And I think Jeb is a decent guy and would make a fine president. He's a man of good character, but it's not his moment. It's not his moment. And he is spending, or his PAC is spending, just mountains of money to attack Marco Rubio, who's a far more likely candidate, and going to, in all likelihood, they're not going to secure the nomination for their candidate and do significant damage to one of the top three. And you just wonder, okay, at what point have you waited too long? At what point does Jeb dropping out no longer an honorable thing to do? And we might be getting to that point. It's painful. It's very frustrating. And Jeb, if you're listening, I'm here for you. Stop by NR. We'll give you a hug. Give you a lollipop. Send you back out there. Oh, man, it's bad. It's bad.
This could be a really fun debate on Saturday night, given all the different sniping that's been going on the last few days. You got Christie, who's going to be going after Rubio. Rubio's going to be aiming upwards, I assume, at Trump and Cruz. Cruz and Trump are going to be going back and forth. You got Jeb trying to throw a few elbows, get back in the race. Kasich is obviously his kind of last stand in here. So this could be kind of a fun sort of organized free-for-all.
Yeah, we're at the mass cannibalism moment of the GOP primary right now.
Ian, do you watch the Democratic debate tonight?
No. I know that I'm paid to do this, but if worse comes to worse, I'm going to have to live with 4 years of Hillary Clinton's grating cackle resonating in my ears, and I just want to postpone that moment as long as humanly possible.
Yeah, I totally would watch it, but ESPN is doing this special on the 85 Bears tonight, and given the choice, I don't think it's a really tough call.
I think ESPN 3 is showing, bowling or ping pong or something. Sounds like a easy choice to me.
Yeah. In this age, your options on TV are certainly going to be better than what who's got it? CNN given the debate tonight.
Yeah, I think that's right.
We'll find out. We'll read about it tomorrow. Ian, have a great day. Good to have you with us as always.
You too, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And Jim will be back on Friday. Join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.